so I felt getting connected. Right. Again, our second speaker, I'm Horace and I'm an addict. Our second speaker is Mark R. Going to jail in the program.
Everybody, my name is Mark and I'm an addict. And I've been blessed with the gift of recovery. And it really is good to be here, man. Today is my birthday. I am 56 years old. And I have a one-year-old. Can everybody hear me? I said I'm 56 years old today, and I have a one-year-old. And I owe that blessing to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Because I firmly believe, my clean date is November 7th, 2001. And I firmly believe, had I not stopped oiling on that date, if that date hadn't been the last day that I shot dope, then I certainly would not be here today living clean. I would not be able to report that I'm 56 years old on April 12th. I was born in Washington, D.C., and I was raised by my grandparents. And my grandparents certainly did not raise a dope fiend. They did not raise me to learn how to oil. They didn't raise me to learn how to cop. They didn't raise me to feel insecure. They didn't raise me to feel inadequate. They didn't raise me to feel any of those things that I was feeling prior to me making a decision to use. But I made that decision. I went to good schools. I had good home training. You know what I'm saying? They did a very good job. I owe none of my addictive problems, as far as I'm concerned, to those people who love me. But I, at some point in my journey, stopped loving myself. And, you know, y'all tell me that my personal recovery depends on NA unity. And I'm so thankful that this program is unified, because when something is unified, that means it's connected. And because it's connected, that means there's a flow. And y'all were in such a flow. When I got here, it was able to flow directly to me. And, you know, when y'all talk about going to jail, you know, clean, you know, when I heard that topic, I'm like, good God Almighty. You know, going to the penitentiary, in my opinion, is one of the worst things that I could do. But it was something that I was doing on a regular basis in active addiction. My story is this. At the end, I was in a hole in my pulse trying to get it to catch with a blue head needle. I literally had a hole there. And when it caught, it was pink blood. And I ran it anyway, because I'm a desperate dope fiend. I got to get that in me. More importantly, what I didn't know was that a section of my intestine had literally collapsed. So I wasn't having regular bowel movements. And I remember a predecessor told me, when I shared this at a friend of mine's anniversary, said, you know, yeah, your doo-doo was about to kill you. And, you know, that's true today. My doo-doo will kill me. You know, what goes in real good comes out as waste. And if I don't let it come out, it can kill me. And the same is true with recovery. You know what I mean? I got to get rid of the weights. The bowel was about to explode in my body. Rushed me to Wash Hospital, Center Hospital in D.C. And the doctor said, son, this was about to happen. The bowel is going to explode in your body. There's a foot-long section of your intestine that has literally collapsed. My thinking told me that, if I'm having bowel movements, I'm ill. If I'm not having bowel movements, I'm constipated because of the methadone. My solution to all my woes was oil and drink meth. And said, but son, we can save you. But if you keep living the way you're living, you're going to die anyway. And that's when the light came on. And it's something about being flat on your back, body racking with pain, feverish, at death's door, that made my ears pop open. And I called my man, who was just like me. He had been here with y'all for 5 years. And, he had to get his paper signed. In fact, I remember the last caper we was on. The last caper we was on, I got away and he got caught. But the reality was, he got away and I was still caught. He had to come get his paper signed. He had to keep coming to these meetings. He had to, you know, he had to report and all that stuff. And bottom line, he accumulated 5 years clean. He said, boy, I'm going to tell you something, man. When you get on your feet, I'm going to take you somewhere. And it's the same attic that we used to sit in all joints with our pants down around our ankles, with a hype in our groin, talking about, boy, don't get no better than this. You know what I mean? And he said, man, when you get on your feet, I'm going to take you somewhere. And he brought me to my first meeting on a Wednesday night out in the South Potomac area in Maryland. And I've been coming ever since. I heard the message. I don't know how I heard it, because I was scared. I was unsure. I couldn't figure out how in the world am I going to live without a shot of dope. I don't know if anybody ever felt that way, but I had this question in my mind. How am I going to live without a shot of dope? Because I was so used to that feeling. When I all that would go down in places that it, you know, that nothing else could ever touch. But y'all said any addict could stop using, lose the desire, lose the desire. That means that compulsion, Mark, will be lifted. That thought to always gotta make a move will be lifted. That, Mark, you can sit still and not have to make a move. That compulsion will be lifted. Can stop using, lose the desire, and find a new way to live. And trust me when I tell you this, it's easier said than done. You know, we use a lot of words around here. And words mean something. We use words like the end. We use words like last choice. The bottom. And for the life of me, every movie that I've ever seen, whenever it says the end, that's real simple. You don't need no degree. You don't need nothing to understand that that's it. That's the end. Prior to my getting that situation in the hospital and having the intestines collapse, and I had been hit 7 times. I hit 5 times in my chest and stomach, twice in my back. And the doctor told my mother, the surgeon, he said, literally, he said, I could have pulled a sheet over him, but something told me to work on him. And what I'm talking about is that God was operating in and around and through in my life way before I even had a clue. Now, it was years. That was in 1993, when May 17th, to be exact, 1993. I've had a lot of life-saving surgery, so what you see necessarily is not what you get. Look, jive all right on the outside, but well put back together on the inside. Lot of battle scars. Lot of old abscesses that done healed up. Lot of old places where I can see the spots where I used to go at. You know, a lot of scars, lot of skid marks, lot of stuff where my behind done scraped the concrete as a direct result of the disease of addiction. And one would have thought that I had this great experience with God, because I remember I was locked up. And I'm getting to go into jail in recovery. But I got to try to put this thing together, because it's very important at how this thing worked for me. I was in, and I said that famous prayer that I don't know if any of you all ever said it. But I said, Lord, if you get me out of this one, I ain't going to never. I'm talking about I ain't going to never do this again. I made a vow to the God that I call God. And a vow is a very serious thing. You know, Mark, watch what you say. Watch the promises you make. And as soon as, by the grace of God, I was on parole, I was facing a 20 to 60 year mandatory sentence. The judge said, son, I don't want to do this. They always call me son. Son, I don't want to do this. But I'm compelled by the law. I'm compelled by the sentencing guidelines. I have to give you a mandatory 20 to 60 years if you're found guilty on this charge. And I'm like, I'm not no kingpin. I ain't no big boy. I ain't like that. None of that. I was in the way. I was in the way. But when he said that, I, you know, for some reason I could not take the cop, because I already had this much time over my head for parole. There was no way I was going to get out of this situation without double digits, even if I took the cop. So my thought was, for the first time in my life, I got to fight. I ain't never fought a case a day in my life. You know, them jailhouse lawyers, that, boy, you, blah, 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 you can do this, you can do that. And they show you a whole bunch of documentation, and everybody got paperwork and books, but they all locked up just like me. Smart as a monkey, you know what I mean? But they in. And I couldn't take the cop for some reason. And by the grace of God, I was found not guilty after a week of being in trial. And, you know, by this time I was beginning to heal from the incident that occurred where I got hit 7 times. You know, I got my lung puncture, vena cava severed. It took 178 units of blood to save my life. I had this great experience with God. I had an experience, but I did not have a relationship. And there's a difference. And I continued after I got out to do exactly what I had done before I got hit. Shoot dope and drink meth. And for the life of me, I thought I was done. So I continued with the madness. And they at the end, that's what when the guy brought me to the program, came to the program and began to prosper. And now I am what's considered a career criminal. The courts have deemed me a career criminal, which is a terrible thing, you know, especially once you get on this side. Being on this side and dealing with the rejection, dealing with the fear, dealing with the thoughts of how am I going to normalize my life, how am I going to become gainfully employed, how am I going to take the next step, how am I going to establish credit, how am I going to be able to do all the things that you all were doing when I got all this stuff looming over my head. But what I didn't understand then was that you all have sat right where I've sat. You all have faced your fears and your challenges just like the fears and challenges that I have to face. And you all have succeeded. And one thing the program talks about is that it doesn't matter whether you're successful or whether you're failing. That ain't the whole story. There's always more to it than that immediate option or look of success, or that immediate occasion where it seems like I'm failing. Mark, there's more than that to it. But I'm learning that the lessons of faith that I have to learn are really tried. Man, I get tried in the fire. The things that really matter in terms of me growing up and becoming the person, the recovering person that God would intend for me to be, man, really require a testing at my core. When I was working in treatment, and I gotten a letter went to another recovering addict where he was in recovery, he relapsed, another addict's house, and I ignored the letter initially. And you know, when you ignore stuff, it don't go nowhere. But I'm just skipping along, you know, enjoying life, acting like everything is all right. But I ignored the letter. And the next thing I know, I get a call about maybe 2 weeks or so later and said, man, the marshals have been here looking for you. And I said, the marshals? Oh, my God. Now, you know, what's real interesting about, you know, marshals are, you know, they're very dedicated men. They're real relentless, and they're real vigilant. And I'm working, and what I didn't know, the warrant had been out since 2008. Now, mind you, I have not sold no narcotics in the program. Let's get the record straight. I ain't sold no dope. I ain't hustled. I ain't done no crazy stuff since I've been clean as it relates to breaking the law. Now, I done some crazy stuff. And I got the scars to show it. But I'm saying I have not broken the law. I learned my lesson. So I'm saying, man, the warrant had been out since 2008. And they wanted me to come and turn myself in. Now, this was 2000. I didn't know nothing about it in 2008. This was 2010 when I finally got word of it. And I'm going to tell you something, man. The fear that I experienced, and I done been to jail I can't even count the times that I done crossed the R&D table, that I done had to strip down, show the bottom of my feet, spread my butt cheeks, get one of them old funky jumpsuits, stand in that gang shower and get sprayed down, go up to the infirmary and do all that stuff you gotta go. I've done that 100,000 times, it seems. And I've done it ill. But now, man, this is what happened. The marshals, you know, he called me on my cell phone. This was really amazing. Called me on my cell phone. And he said, look, you know, man, I've been doing my homework. He said, whenever I'm looking for somebody, I do my homework. And man, what I know is you a good dude. You know how we say, man, that was a good dude, man. He was a good dude. I said, boy, he running game like a bum. He said, you a good dude. He said, man, I done checked you out. I guess you have checked me out. My record is yay long. You know, it's easy to check me out. And he said, man, look, come on down, turn yourself in. I said, sir, no. Now, you know, what's so amazing to me is that, you know, my mind is not my best friend. And fear, false expectations appearing real, it was real. All I could see was going back into the system, getting caught up, being in Easter blip, waiting to see the parole board, everything that I done worked for. Man, by now, I can sign my name and get stuff. I got my own documentation. I got my lease. I got my car. I got my good job. I'm going in and out of the jails on a regular basis, helping individuals just like me. I'm doing all of this stuff in recovery. I feel like a poster child for the U.S. Parole Board, for real. But he said, man, you got to turn yourself in. And then you good NA individuals, y'all agreed with it. Y'all said, Mark, man, you got to turn yourself in. Like, and my mind was, man, you going to run, you got to. But how can I live like that? But man, I was so paranoid. I remember being in a restaurant. Me and a young lady was in a restaurant. And I looked over. Now, I'm clean. I looked over and I seen these guys sitting there and they had the bald heads. I said, baby, them the feds, we got a rope. And I left. Man, I felt, you know, there's a whole lot of different prisons. There's not only that physical one, there's a mental prison. And I think I stay more locked up in my mind than I've ever spent time behind a fence or razor wire. And it's interesting because even clean and free and living free, I can go in a place in my head that'll have me as locked up as if I was behind the wall. For all those who know what behind the wall is, I can be that locked up in my mind. I can be in a relational prison. Because I've been in some where I feel like I need to make parole from this relationship. I know none of y'all don't know what I'm talking about. Somebody might need to make bond right now. And go in clean. But that's a whole nother meeting, I guess. But I went in and When I turn myself in, I call my sponsor, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I have a home group. My home group is the Men's Rap in D.C. We meet over at United Medical Center. Our theme is Men Under Construction. And what a blessing, man. But the interesting thing is that, you know, I went, y'all talk about a foundation, having a foundation. It is so important to have a foundation. And in that foundation, there's a belief system. My grandsponsor talks about a belief system. He talks about a system of belief. Not just an event of believing that one time, but I'm talking about a system of believing. So no matter what happens, Mark, you're able to still believe. You're able to still attach to the hope. Now, what's so interesting is that I know two things about me. I'm a surrender one way or the other. I'm either going to surrender to the program, or I'm going to surrender to despair and hopelessness. And that's what desperation is. It's surrendering to hopelessness. And I've been there. You know, where I just felt like wasn't no use. I just gave up. But there was something in me, even in going in, that would not allow me to give up. You hear what I'm saying? I had enough foundation. I had developed a belief system in recovery that although I was scared, although I felt challenged, although I did not know what was going to happen, and I'm going to tell you something. R&D is still the same. For anybody that's wondering whether it's changed, they still do the same thing when they lock you up. You know, I was up under district court. And district court ain't like superior court. District court is quiet, real serene. I go in and man, look, it's still the same. It smells the same. The same graffiti is on the walls. The bunks still feel the same. You still get the same orange jumpsuits. They still feed you off them little brown trays. They still give you that mystery food. You still wait in the infirmary to see somebody. They still talk to you like you're nobody. You still feel like, now I'm clean with a whole bunch of stuff, a whole lot of people in my corner, but I felt lower than a footprint. But I'm going to tell you something, man. Something else kicked in. I was in there for 8 days. And God said, be quiet. Don't say nothing. Don't blend. Don't get with the program, because that's not your program no more. You got a whole nother program. Be quiet. I had to be still for 8 days. And I watched the support and the help come. And this is just for me. I'm in my cell with my Bible. God said, I told you I'm your defense. I told you I'm your battle axe. I told you I'm your armor. The tears started to run down my face in that cell by myself. I had a cell buddy that had just finished doing 22 years and was right back in 1 year facing a whole nother life sentence. I had the opportunity to pray for this brother who refused to talk to his family and tell him about the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Another guy sitting there said, man, all I can do is think about getting to a meeting. I thought y'all was faking. He had one arm, one leg from a shotgun blast, 60-some years old, facing a life sentence. Somehow, man, all I can think about is going to a meeting. But I can't now because I thought y'all was faking. And look at him. He was in the cell. And I said, good God Almighty. But it was like God allowed me to pass through. And that rite of passage, what it did for me was, it strengthened my faith. It gave me a real faith lesson. I'm not talking about a faith like, well, faith to get the car, faith to get the girl, faith to get the this, that, or that. Not faith to get a thing, but faith to understand that, Mark, you are greater than this. God didn't save you. He didn't get you clean. He didn't allow you to live through all that tragedy and get rid of all that wreckage just to shut you down just like that. You got a purpose. And it's to help somebody. One of my predecessors told me, said, Mark, whenever God allows you to go on a detour like that, man, he's working something out in you. So if right now you're on a detour and you feel like you're off track, don't even worry about it. God is working something out. Because we don't get here by accident. We don't get here by happenstance. There is a design and a purpose for everybody's life that's sitting in this room that claims that they're in recovery and living clean one day at a time. And guess what?
It ain't over.
It ain't over. You know, my faith has a job. It has a job because I see something. That's the hope. You know, when you can't see nothing, there's no hope. But when God began to open my eyes and allow me to see something, it gives my faith something to do. My faith is built on my hope. It gives me something to do. It means I'm working towards something. And that's why I say it doesn't matter about the success or the faith. Man, this thing is bigger than the event. Our lives are connected for a reason and a purpose. And I don't know where y'all at. And hopefully no one will have to go to jail in recovery to get this particular lesson. But for me, this is the way I had to get it. And mine seemed to come hard. But it's all good. You know what I mean? Because I've nothing missing, nothing broken. In fact, what God did was, it was like being in a slingshot. You know, it's like he was pulling me back. Then all of a sudden, he just, bang, let me go. And a recovering addict told me, said, man, God's equation is like this. He said, he'll subtract in order to multiply. But I got to have the capacity to be able to stand up under the blessing. You know what I mean? Want a lot of stuff, like do a lot of stuff, but man, you got to have the inside stuff, Mark. You got to have really what it takes on the inside to handle the blessing, to really handle, to be able to carry the message. You got to have the inside stuff. In order to communicate the hope, Mark, you got to have the inside stuff. You can't just be talking loud and saying nothing. You got to have the inside stuff. Y'all said, Mark, it's an inside job. Man, I'm learning that lesson more and more every day I stay clean. Look, my name is Mark. I'm an addict. And my time is up. I hope I was able to help somebody. Thank you. Let me share.